Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast, presents episode 574, Burn Baby Burn, recorded live on March 22nd, 2017. Hello, everyone. Welcome to Podtacular, the unofficial Halo Universe podcast. I am your host, Duststorm.
And I'm your co-host, Godzilla T.
And we're back with another fun-filled Halo lore-ish episode, covering some more Halo Wars 2 goodness with a guest this time around. We haven't had him on the show yet, and we figured it's about time to bring some more guest power into the show. So we are happy to have Hidden Xperia on the podcast. Welcome to Podtacular, dude.
Thanks, dude. I'm very happy to be here. As I was saying before, I'm a big fan of the podcast, have been for a long time. I'm just ready to talk some Halo.
Awesome. We are glad you're here, because we have lots to talk about. And thank you, Green Machine, for the follow. We have quite a few new people here because of Mr. Hidden Xperia, or Luke for short. So thanks everyone for tuning in to this special podcast tonight as we bring back, actually, I think you're our first guest for this year. You're breaking the guest spot for, you're breaking in the chair for this year. How's that make you feel?
Vacant. Oh.
Do we lose him?
I don't know. Shows he's still in the call.
It does show he's still in the call, but he's not saying anything. Do we scare him away that quick? Oh no!
There we go. Call he drop. Flagged down.
Well, once he gets back in, we're going to have a little bit of interview with Hidden Xperia and ask him how he got started with the Halo YouTube stuff and how he's doing on all of his lore videos. But we'll go ahead and talk a little bit about some of the news while we wait for Luke to get back. We had a little bit of an update, as some people may have seen, between the announcement from PAX East a little while back, about a week and a half ago back, and then some of the news on Waypoint, that we have our first bit of Halo Wars 2 DLC being the new leader, Kensano.
Mm-hmm.
So we are very much interested in what's going on with the new DLC stuff, and we're happy to see that we got our first one out here in the first month, which is all very nice and dandy. So we are going to discuss a little bit about some of the units. We got a little bit of backstory from the PAX panel that happened about a week and a half ago, but now it's time to dive a little bit into the units that are going to be available to us. So, GT, why don't you kick us off?
Well, let's see. They updated a Cyclops for her. You have your standard Cyclops with, you know, your UNSC units, which are anti-vehicle. These are Cyclops with flamethrowers. You'll notice the theme here.
It's very hot.
It's a very hot leader. Anyway, also, as your legendary unit, she is in a mech suit that is a massive mech. She has a special ability, which is the flame wall, which basically she has twin flamethrowers, and her normal attack is she uses one at a time. You activate her ability and she just pumps out a massive amount of fire. Good for, you know, clearing large groups of grunts or pretty much anything that's in front of you, like a base. The thing with pretty much all the units is they do fire. Next one, you know, you have your flamethrower units. On the Warthog, you have two versions of a Warthog. You have a flame hog, and then you have a longer incendiary. I forget what they actually called it.
Talking about the veteran flame hog, or?
Yeah, the veteran flame hog, which has more range than the standard Warthog. They both do fire damage. Your standard Warthog is more your traditional flamethrower, real close in, you know, not good against ground units, things like that. But you got to be up close and personal. The veteran hog launches incendiary grenades, if I remember correctly.
Yes, it has an incendiary grenade launcher on it.
Yeah, it pushes that. It can reach out and attack from a greater distance than your standard hog. You have your veteran Hellbringers, which in Blitz, well, in both the standard and in blitz. They come at a higher cost. They do a greater amount of damage, so they have more damage, more health. Your ODSTs, which I'm kind of glad they did this. For one of your leader powers, you have an ODST drop, which we've already talked about a little bit. But the best part is, one, you're dropping in ODST flamethrowers. Two, the drop pods themselves have a larger area of effect.
Nice.
Pell charge, it's a friendly buff that briefly increases speed and damage output of the units while they're under the effect. This is another one of the leader powers. You have a napalm missile strike. It's similar to an archer missile strike, but it does fire damage, hence the theme here.
Yep.
there's a trend running.
Yeah, it has a extended time of effect. I mean, yes, you have the initial strike, which does damage, but your structure or units or whatever you attack with it continually take damage for a set period of time instead of just from that initial barrage. So it's a good, a good way for access denial or to do, damage on a base or something like that, because it'll continue to take off the damage even after the initial strike, which, that's pretty much with fire. It does that pretty much across the board, as long as it's burning.
Yeah.
Inferno is a higher cost, but it is a massive blast that leaves a longer burning area of effect. And it also affects a larger radius. So again, large group of enemy, drop on there, kill everything.
Burn everything into a nice, nice crisp burger.
Yes. I'm sensing a very hot theme here.
Yes. We're going to have a weenie roast with the banished. Oh.
A grunty roast?
We're going to have a little roast grunt for dinner.
You see, on the Alpha Colonies, I'd imagine that grunt burgers, ungoy burgers, are actually quite the speciality. You have an ungoy burger with some nice iceberg lettuce and a pickle, and...
Of course, you have to add the pickle.
You gotta have the pickle. You gotta have the Rhodesian Ridgeback pickle. You gotta have one on there. You can't ungoy burger.
We're getting specific here with our pickles.
Dude, I research my ungoy burgers, right? I pick the best ungoy meat out. You gotta do it.
I just can't get past the Moa burgers. I mean, once you've had one, nothing else quite matches it.
You can't go back. I admit, the meat in the Moa burger is so succulent compared to ungoy. I must admit.
Well, the Moa burgers are just so gamey, and the ungoy burgers are just so clammy. But I mean, everyone has their own particular taste.
I prefer gamey over clammy.
You know what I prefer?
Me too.
A mixture of the both. Dip my fingers in both jars.
Nice. We can have a nice roast with Kinsano then.
Okay, there we go. Yeah. We'll just have to invite her over for dinner.
Yeah.
All you have to do is buy the fuel. Oh.
Yeah, buy the fuel.
The fire pit's in the back.
With Kinsano, her deathmatch, domination, and stronghold abilities, you have a red line, which is a passive tier 2 ability that provides an additional speed and damage boost for newly spawned units only. Not anything that you already have on the field. And of course, that runs for a limited time. You also have Heat of the Battle, which is a tier 3. It offers an agility buff and empowers friendly units with an increased damage resistance and damage output whenever they gain a kill. So whenever the unit kills something, it gets more health. It does more damage.
That is really powerful. Really powerful. Uh-huh.
They have the Flaming Warthog drop. It's a tier 3. It deploys 3 veteran flame hogs to the battle. So drop a load of hurt on somebody for a reasonably not too expensive, not too low cost. I'm sure that's probably something that will be adjusted as they play.
Yeah, definitely.
Have Firestorm Group, which is another active power. It is the ability to call down a squad. You get Hellbringers, a scorpion, and two hornets. And they also drop buffing the drop zone with, you know, the a max level hell charge, which, you know, from the video that they showed looked pretty impressive.
Yeah, well, it's like you get the power, because, you know, in Halo Wars 2, when you drop ODSTs normally, they do a little bit of sort of splash damage when they hit the floor. That just seems like a more powerful version of that.
Well, you know, this one is you're actually dropping vehicles in instead of ODSTs, but she, you know, she does also have that ODST drop, which drops flamethrowers, but they have a wider field of, or a wider area of effect than a standard ODST pod.
Kind of makes sense, considering she has fire and all that. Definitely makes sense.
This honestly feels like my leader. I am the, in the first person shooter Halos, I am the upfront and personal type of player. So this seems like right up my level of, or my style of gameplay.
Yeah, she seems very rushy as well. Like, she seems like she's going to be the rush character of Halo Wars 2.
Yeah, I did notice that several of her cards do have the rush modifier. So they spawn in Blitz, at least, with full health.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can understand that, definitely.
So that's a good things to look at is those modifiers on cards. Hers had rush and blast on a lot of them. So when they die, they go boom. It goes boom. That's all you need.
Goes boom. Yes, it goes boom. Goes boom. She's going to be very strong for rushing. The fact that, A, she's fire, which is Halo Wars 2's anti-structure, and B, she has a load of warhogs. She's going to be a very strong rushing leader. Very strong.
Yeah, I can't wait to actually get to play a game with her. I went to play the other night, and unfortunately, I was on my laptop, and the game kept crashing. So
I tried earlier, and it just wouldn't have it. It wouldn't update.
Well, it sounds like they may have fixed some of that too.
Yeah.
Hopefully. Hopefully. Yeah, I can't wait to be one of those annoying 1v1 players that just sends 30 warhogs at your base in the first 5 minutes of the game. You know those 1v1 players that make you smash your controller? Yeah, they're me.
Yeah.
That's me, unfortunately. They were the worst in Halo Wars 1, and I'm afraid that that's who I am. It was me all along.
No worries.
Well, I have to admit, back in Halo Wars, the original Halo Wars, I had a pretty good rush with Locusts.
Oh, yeah. I still love that rush.
I can't do it anymore. I tried.
I didn't play all that much Halo Wars when it first came out. It's only in the past couple of years when I started playing it again, literally after they announced Halo Wars 2. And me and my friend started coming up with a bunch of really obscure rushes. And it ended up, one of the last rushes that we did was an Honor Guard rush, right? It seems awful. I kid you not, if you have two sets of 50 Honor Guards attacking the same building at the same time, that building, it just drops. It goes down instantly. I don't know why they're 50? So powerful. Yeah.
You know, it's a full pop of Honor Guard.
Jeez, that's, oh my gosh.
It was safe to say the game began lagging like hell.
if you're getting a full pop of Honor Guard, it's not really a rush.
Well, it depends how fast you get them out, I guess. But what we normally did, we'd send like sort of like a fire team of like 15, obviously send them with regret as well, and then just keep on sending them. And it got to the point where they just stop attacking you because they knew they'd lost. They just knew they were done.
It's like, I'm just going to take care of this for you, and I'm going to self-destruct my base.
yeah, self-destruct, resign, goodbye. I will give Halo Wars 2 one thing. There doesn't seem to be as many annoying rushes. I mean, there's the Marine spam that's quite annoying, and the Chopper spam, but really that's all I've encountered so far.
Well, with this last update, they addressed that. They toned down the Choppers so that they don't do as much damage against non-scout units. So, you know, you can live a little longer. They take more damage from turrets, so you can put up turrets and, you know, kind of defend your base a little easier, which is that's a good thing. You know, there's also the Anders Sentinel Rush, which they're working on.
Oh.
That one looks totally annoying.
Yeah, no, that's happened to me once before, and that was one of the least fun games I've ever played. They do so much damage. Like, they do so much damage. It's not
it looks like they're going to tone down their damage output and then also scale or increase their build time so you can't get them out as quickly.
Okay, that should work. That should definitely work.
So, you know, they're still working on it. And, you know, for multiplayer, for, you know, right out of the box, I think they did a real good job.
Oh, for sure. Definitely. I think, out of the box, the game was very good.
And it's kind of one of those things that it'll be balanced over time with how players use certain units and how gameplay evolves and that kind of stuff. So it's expected that we're going to see some units not be quite tuned right, and they're going to make the changes and everything will be all fine and happy.
Yeah, it's sort of in the same boat as MOBAs, where you have like constant meta shifting. So like for like a month or two, one unit will be like the go-to, and then next month they'll nerf that and they'll buff something else, and then it'll move to that. And I think it's just going to be a long cycle of meta changes, which is good because it keeps the game fresh, keeps it interesting.
You're always evolving your strategies.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the game needs.
And I do also like the fact that they're making the individual leaders available. So, you know, for those who didn't want to buy the season pass, they can pick the leaders they want.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a nice, you know, because previously, if you wanted the DLC, you had to buy all of it. But
yeah,
if you just want this particular leader, you can go to the store and you can pick it up. It's $6 US and, you know, you can go on down the road, which, you know, I like that. As far as microtransactions, that I like.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think that's probably the best way to do a microtransaction if you're going to do them, because it doesn't feel like content that should have been there at launch. It doesn't feel like they're withholding content that you should have. It feels like genuinely new content. It feels like an actual form of micro DLC. It's not where in other games where it's like, oh, it's a skin or it's one weapon. It's like, no, you get like an actual new leader. Like whole new traits, whole new units. It's like a whole new experience.
And it doesn't give the purchaser a advantage. I mean, it's not like buying a Norfang.
Nah, not at all. Because obviously in this game you can counter stuff. Like, yeah, say let's say Kinsano drops down 10 flame warhogs. Great, I'll build hunters. It's like you can counter it. It's possible to counter. It's just it just gives you a new experience, which is, in my opinion, it's a good way to do it. If you're going to do it like that.
And I bet likely we'll see our next leader be a Banished leader.
I'm sure they'll alternate them, yeah.
Well, now we have 5 UNSC leaders and 3 Banished leaders, so Banished are a little on the odd side of the equation, so.
It's worth noting as well that very subtly, I think it was at SDC last year, Kevin Grace like sort of maybe pseudo hinted at Prometheans as well.
Maybe pseudo.
Yeah, let's hope so.
Wink, wink,
wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. Yeah, I think we'll get Prometheans to some degree.
It'd be interesting.
It would be cool because in Halo 5 Guardians, we've seen a little bit of a lean towards the grunts with the grunt mechs and all that stuff. It'd be interesting if there was a grunt leader.
I've heard people saying that. Yeah, it'd be kind of cool. What if like every single one of their units was a grunt? So like you had regular grunt infantry, then you had like a grunt sniper, and then you had grunt like ghost. Special ops grunts. Yeah, grunt ghost, special ops grunts for like anti-vehicle.
The grunt mechs.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool if it was just like purely grunts.
That would be interesting.
Well, I don't think you would get grunt snipers, but we might get grunt fuel rods.
Yeah. As anti-vehicle. That could work.
But yeah, your legendary unit would be a grunt mech. That would be cool. Be interesting what they do for leader powers.
That's a very good point, because I can't exactly imagine a grunt leading like a battle cruiser.
Yeah.
You could probably have something
it like... It starts raining plasmonades.
Yeah. God. It rains suicide grunts.
Well, I was thinking one of the passive traits could be just when the grunt dies, there's a little explosion.
Yay!
That's not a bad idea, actually. That could work. So each unit has like a passive suicide mode.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's some of the stuff that we just read in Kinsano's, when certain things are active, I don't think it was necessarily one of the passive ones, but one of the active ones is that if one of the unit dies during, what was it, the hell charge, then they explode, right? When they die?
Oh, yeah. They explode.
Yeah, something like that, except it's, instead of fire, it's plasma.
Yeah. I love that idea. It should work.
It fits the automatically turns on the Grunt birthday party skull.
Yes.
I'm down for that.
343, please.
Yeah, please be 43.
Please. Please.
I really hope they do. I mean, I've got another hope for a leader that I know it's never going to happen, but it's a long shot, but I'm still hoping for it. I'd love to see a Gravemind. I really would.
Oh, yeah. A Flood leader, that would be cool.
Yeah, it'd be so good.
Of course, they would need to introduce Flood back into the series first, but yes.
Not necessarily.
Well, I guess, yeah, they did put Forge in there, and he's dead.
Long dead. Or is he? Find out next week on Hidden Xperia.
Yeah. Ooh.
No. That was a joke. I ain't doing that video. Oh. No chance.
Are we teasing?
We are definitely not teasing. That's like on par with why I think Noble Six is still alive. That's not happening. It's never happening.
But then...
Well, we never did see a body.
Not this again. Dude, I swear to God. Recently, I've had so many comments on one of my Reach videos saying, we didn't see a body. We just saw a helmet. How do we know that the Elite stabbed him? Maybe they missed. They didn't miss. Right? They did not miss. Noble Six is dead. Absolutely guaranteed dead.
Yeah, it wouldn't be the first time we went down a rabbit hole.
We thought Cortana was dead.
Wait, what?
We thought Cortana was dead.
Ugh, don't mention that.
Anyways, let's move on. So patch notes that came with the Kansano update. I put a few of them in the little notes that we have. We can go through a little bit more if you guys want to. But in general, crashes, it seemed like there were a lot of crashes that were fixed with regards to calling in units or activating certain things or other pieces in the campaign that would just randomly crash the game. You would think that would
like
be kind of...
finishing the first level.
Yes.
I mean, it's always a good sign when they're fixing bugs, so I'm all for it.
Yes, but some of these bugs you would think they didn't get that figured out before the game launched?
Yeah.
It kind of all depends on what is causing the bug. Is it, a problem with the game, or if it's just hardware compatibility?
Well, something like fix the crash that occurred when watching the prologue cinematic. How hard is it to say, okay, watch all cinematics, see if it crashes. Okay.
Well, see, that's just it. That particular bug I have not had.
Yeah,
on
same.
Any of my system. I'm running it on my desktop, which is, it's my beast. Of course, it's out of date. It's a beast. Anyway. Then I have, I have a laptop, which, it's not a slouch, but again, it's out of date and it's not a gaming PC. On that one, I do have some issues running the game on that one, even at a low setting. Like the other night I was playing it and I would finish the first mission because I was going to do another playthrough, and I get to the end of the mission and the game would just crash. But I come up and I play the game on my desktop and it goes right through it. Just, like nothing. So I do think there's some hardware compatibility issues that they're still working on. And also, it could be, NVIDIA drivers, just video drivers, things like that. I've noticed that NVIDIA has been pumping out some pretty frequent updates over the last month or so.
Yeah, well, they had a specific driver update for Halo Wars 2.
Did they really?
Yeah. Yeah, they did.
Maybe I should update. I haven't updated in a couple months.
I've got a update pending for my desktop. And I just updated my laptop.
I did that, yeah. It's for Mass Effect. I did that yesterday. Yeah,
speaking of which, I cannot wait to play that game.
It's good. It is good. I'm enjoying it so far.
Good.
Definitely good.
Back to Halo Wars 2 stuff. Gameplay fixes, some that I thought were notable. Fix an issue with challenges sometimes not progressing in solo team war or team objective playlists. So I haven't played multiplayer yet, but I would assume that would be kind of a big one, especially when people probably playing to do challenges for the day and aren't getting their challenges done. So there's that one. AI now garrisons a bit more often in legendary when low on health. Nightingale's smoke bombs now stop turrets shooting outside of the smoke, identical to how units behave. Fix an issue with the AI ignoring sentinel recaptured control points. and fixed an issue where the AI would sometimes kill its own units by toggling a light bridge.
What? That's hilarious.
Now that would have been a good one to catch on film.
I was thinking too. You can make a little montage
turn this
out of
off now.
Imagine you're like moving your Spartan across a light bridge, and this all of a sudden you have some random marine just go and turn off a light bridge.
One random marine kills like $1 billion Spartan because of a misclick. Like, whoops.
Spartan down.
Yeah. Kills one of the last remaining Spartan 2s by an accidental misclick.
Your Spartan is down and he's not recoverable because he's in the pit.
Move units near Spartan to recover.
That'd be funny. Like, you move units over the light bridge and you have to like try to force Marine to be like, okay, turn it off now so I can get my Spartan back. I'm going to sacrifice these guys so I can get my Spartan back.
Yeah.
And then he's stuck at the bottom of a ravine.
Well, unless an enemy comes over and then you can somehow get him to like jump out of the ravine on top of the enemy vehicle and then board it. That'd be the only way I could think that you could actually get out of that situation.
Yeah.
All random and wild speculation.
I think the fix for that is restart level.
Yeah.
Yeah, kidding. I'm pretty sure it would be.
The last thing that I thought was notable, and this was something that actually got brought up by Toa Freak in one of his recent videos, but fix some text in a few Phoenix logs.
Ah, yeah. Me and a couple guys, including Toa, we were spotting those out. Like, the one that Tara mentioned in his video, we brought that one to light. It was about, basically, Isabel said that the Banished arrived 4 months before the Spirit of Fire did to the Ark. But then there's a Phoenix log that said that the Banished first attacked the Henry Land base in October, which would put it about 7 months or 6 months before. So there are quite a few little discrepancies like that, but they're fixed now. So all is well.
Yay!
Frank, you're supposed to be watching that stuff.
Actually, that's supposed to be Grim, I think.
Oh, okay. Well, it could be both. Now, so all is
I thought Frank was in charge of making sure that all the stories, all the pieces meshed.
Well, isn't that technically the narrative director?
Well, I meant as far as across the entire Halo series, not just for a single game.
I thought that was narrative director, because the narrative director controls the, as far as I'm aware at least, I might be wrong, but the overall narrative, so like working out how they intertwine and stuff, but maybe that's me.
I think that's just for the game. I don't think that's necessarily the whole franchise, which I think that's what Godzilla is saying, is Frankie's supposed to be kind of like the franchise director in taking into account everything that goes into the game and making sure it fits with everything else within the Halo universe. I'm assuming that's what you're talking about, right, GT? Yeah.
In other words, he's the last word as to what the story or what stories get, how stories get told. Or
fair enough.
Like, I don't know.
I'm sure the Ascendant Justice guys and Grimm probably are helping out with that as well.
Oh, I know they are.
Yeah, they will be.
Hell, they're probably writing half of it.
Eric Kibu makes a good point where Frankie's job is probably more on the macro scale, so.
Yeah,
with how much stuff is being pumped out of the studio as well, it may be just hard to keep up with the volume of information and making sure it all fits within the Halo Bible.
Yeah,
I honestly don't know how they do it.
Yeah, it's a lot of work.
I mean, the amount of information that comes out of that studio when you start talking the labels on the back of toys, the books, the games, all that stuff.
Yeah, there's a lot going on at once. Like, they need to make sure that everything is slotted in perfectly, all the dates are correct, all the links are correct. It must be a nightmare.
I know they have a Halo Bible somewhere.
Oh, dude, I would love to get my hands on that and just read it.
No kidding.
That's who behind wouldn't? A locked door, probably a few locked doors.
Yeah. Yeah, man, I bet there's some real juicy stuff in there.
Yes, probably. I'm sure there is. Probably a they lot of answers to questions.
You probably have to walk in there naked just so they didn't think you got anything hid. Couldn't hide anything on your way out.
Can we pull our money and bribe Grimm to look at the Halo Bible?
I'm all done for that.
I don't think we make enough.
I'm not even sure if he has access to it. I don't know if he would have access.
Who actually does have access to it? I bet it's like... There'll be, obviously, I think Frankie will do.
Frankie probably. Maybe like two or three other people. Maybe Bonnie.
I'd imagine Grim does, because Grim is part of the story team, isn't he?
Yeah.
He is.
With as much as he does with the story, I'm sure if it does exist, he has access.
Yeah, he must be. Man, I bet that book is nice.
Actually, I bet that book's a mess with all the rewrites they've had to
do. And I'm sure there's a bunch of loose leaf and inserts and just things spread out everywhere. And it's probably more than just a binder of stuff. It's probably like a few binders.
Yeah. Probably is. A bunch of like crossed out pages, a bunch of like scribbled out words, loads of that stuff.
Unreleased content, revised scripts.
Yeah.
Imagine the treasure trove of information.
Post-it notes are your friend.
Yeah. Man, I bet they use a lot of post-it notes in there.
Oh, geez. All right. Rec updates for Halo 5 Guardians. Not too many this time around. Lots of increases and decreases on rec levels. So, Brute Plasma Rifle changed to 2. Sorrow of Tish to 3 in the scale of Seurapt. Changed
don't
to 4.
Ask me.
Soy wrapped.
Soy wrapped.
I think it's soy wrapped. Yeah.
All the Needlers went down by 1. Hydra is now 4. The Typhoon's 5 and 6. Then the
Echidna.
Thank you. Is 6. Scattershot got down to 3. The other two are the same. Spartan Laser got moved down to 4. The others are the same. Sentinel Beam is 3. And Plasma Turret is 1.
I think they're getting tired of everybody just throwing those plasma turrets away.
Those things are
yep,
pretty much useless.
Yeah, they are pretty trash. I mean, they do like no damage anyway, but the balloon they have is like, it doesn't shoot more than 3 meters.
It's bad.
That thing is awful.
It's really bad.
I don't know, at a level 1 I might start using them in firefight.
I mean, it's quicker to spawn and throw away. Look on the brighter side. That plasma rifle change though, that's pretty huge. That's pretty huge, because the plasma rifle melts shields, and they are going to be everywhere in the early game now.
Yeah, yes, I did notice that I don't see a lot of people pulling plasma rifles out. And you know, I can understand, because for the same cost that they were, you can pull a much more powerful weapon out.
Well, I mean, it was, what was it before? 3? I think it was 3 before.
It was 3. I think it was 3, 4, 5, and now it's 2, 3, 4.
Yeah, well, before it was the same as a shotgun. So why would you not just pull a shotgun out? It just you may as well get a shotgun. Whereas now it's 2, so that's going to be. Yeah, I reckon you'll see a lot of those in the early game.
You reckon?
Oh my! That's a great pun. I didn't even see that. I stumbled on that pun.
I caught it for you.
Oh man,
you're welcome.
Yeah, they're gonna be pretty strong in the early game, I'd say.
I would agree. All right, last bit in the news for this week. As you guys may know, the Halo World Championship Series kicks off this weekend with the grand finals in Burbank, California. I will be there, hopefully getting some interviews and covering some of the festivities. We have a brand new trailer out there, and we have predictions from some of the casters. We have schedules, we have teams. So, quick overview of the teams that we're going to see. So, from North America, we have Optic Gaming, Team Liquid, Team Envious, Straight Rippin', Luminosity, Crowd Pleasers, who were previously Panda Gaming, and Splice. From Europe, we have Fob Games Esports, Supremacy, and London Conspiracy. From Latin America, we have Soar Gaming, previously Shock the World. And from Australia, we have Team Immunity, which I interviewed them last year.
Can I just say, I'm very, very jealous that you're getting to go to Worlds. I'm very jealous. The event is going to be awesome. I'm so stoked for that.
It is. Won't be quite as awesome as last year, because it's going to be at the ESL studios instead of in Hollywood.
Yeah.
But it should still be a fantastic show.
It'll still be good. And as well, last year, like there was so much hype going into the event last year. Like, first major world championship for Halo, massive money on the line, so many storylines going into it with the whole Nadir thing. It's, last year's will be hard to beat.
Yes.
Yeah, have they announced the prize pool for this year?
It's $1 million.
Yeah, it's $1 million. They said that they're going to do crowdfunding for open events instead of Worlds this year. So they're still going to use rec money, but it's just not for Worlds.
Okay.
Kind of makes sense.
Hey, it's still $1 million.
Yeah, it's still like a hell of a lot of money. It is a lot of money.
Still a lot of money.
If Optic win it this year, again, Frosty, bearing in mind Frosty is 17, right? That kid is 17. He will have won like 400K minimum in the past year. He's 17. Can we just like, that is insurmountable. The amount of money, like, ugh, it's crazy. It's mental.
Video game esports payouts are getting up there as far as where they are kind of in the similar area with sports. I could see a trend where video game and esports could possibly become maybe not quite at the level as athletics, because I think there's a lot more corporate backing in athletics, and there probably will be than there ever will be for esports. But I think
More advertising money.
True.
For now.
As the internet becomes more prevalent, I think we'll get a lot more of a focus in that direction. But I think you're always going to be stuck with like sports kind of was that initial entertainment venue. So that's where you're going to get a lot more of the popularity and a lot more of the advertisements and the money backing behind those things. But I could still see, I mean, you already see it with League, CSGO, and some of these other big AAA games getting a lot of focus, not necessarily in the US, but definitely in other countries.
Yeah, well, there's actually a really, really interesting BBC News article on esports. I think it was actually yesterday, where they were interviewing Jimbo, who plays for Fabi, for those who aren't aware. And in that article, they were looking at the numbers for esports, and they said that it brings in roughly 160 million viewers a year. And I obviously knew that esports is huge and everything, but that is a lot more than I thought. And they also said that that is literally on par with tennis. Esports right now is essentially as big as tennis, which is kind of crazy to say that 5 years ago, esports was like, what, a 50th, a 100th of what it is now? In 5 years, it's grown that much. It's crazy. Like, give it 10 years and yeah, like you said, it will be up there. I can't ever see it competing with like soccer or NFL or basketball, but it's going to be up there.
I didn't even know it was as big as tennis.
Yeah, that blew me away. Like I genuinely didn't think it would be. Like it's on par with tennis.
Wow.
Yeah, pretty big.
All right. Well, so the bracket lineup, there's going to be group play starting on Friday, and then they'll be split out into the bracket to end the day on Friday. So Group A is Crowd Pleasers, Supremacy from the EU and Optic Gaming. Group B is London Conspiracy from the EU, Team Liquid, and Luminosity. Group C is Splice, Team Immunity from Australia, and Team Envious. And then Group D is Sword Gaming from Latin America, Fab Esports from the EU, and Straight Rippin' from North America. So in the group play, each team will play every other team at least once, and then the worst teams from each group will be placed into the loser's bracket. So it's a 12-team bracket, so 8 teams will be fed into the winner's bracket, 4 teams will be fed into the loser's bracket, and it's double elimination, except for the loser's bracket. If you start in the loser's bracket and you get knocked out, then you're out for good. FFA tournament is also going to be starting on Saturday. And then the grand finals for the FFA will be on Sunday. It's a 6-player FFA, single elimination. Top 3 move on from each round. For the group stage, the group play is going to start at 10 a.m. Eastern time. There's going to be 2 streams. There's going to be a main stream and a Bravo stream. And then starting at 7 p.m. Eastern time, and remember, or sorry, not Eastern, Pacific time, that will be the winner's brackets. We'll start play. Saturday resumes at 10 a.m. Pacific time. Then Sunday resumes at 10 a.m. Pacific time as well. The prize pool gets split out to the first place team getting 500,000. Second place gets 200,000. Third place, 100,000. Fourth place, 50,000. Fifth and sixth, 35. Seventh and eighth, 20. And 9th through 12th, 10,000 apiece. So regardless, each team is going to be walking away with at least 10 grand. for the team. So that's 2,000 per player.
Still not a bad payout.
That's not a bad holiday. That's not a bad holiday.
No. It's enough to cover the trip.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's super nice. That's such a nice amount of money. It's going to be a good event.
And the lineup for the casters and the analysts is the biggest one I think we've seen so far in Halo Championship Series. There's going to be 10 of them, including Elamite, T-Squared, Washi, Strongside, Ghostayami, Gaskin, Sims, Wonderboy, Alex Toss, and Josh Gray. Or Axel Toss, sorry. I flipped the L and the X. Axel Toss.
An all-star cast.
We have eight casters and analysts and two hosts.
Should be a damn good event. I'm really looking forward to it.
Tell you what, I'm missing Miles up there.
Oh, yeah. Same. Shame he can't come over from Australia. It was fun last year watching him cast all the Aussie games.
Oh, he was so fun to watch, and he was so fun to get to know. I got to spend a lot of time with him, and he's such a cool dude. He really is.
Yeah, I've spoken to him quite a lot on Twitter, and he seems like a super nice guy. Awesome beard, too.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Awesome beard. Yeah, speaking of Australia, actually, Immunity actually beat Splice in a scrim last night. So they actually, like, if they could actually make it quite far, like, I could honestly see Team Immunity taking it quite far for Australia. That's going to be super interesting to see how they can rack up against other teams.
We saw an international team. We saw one of the European teams making it to the top 8 last year. It would be kind of cool if we saw one of the international teams making it to the top 4. Just saying.
I'd love it. I honestly think that Fabi could do it. I genuinely think if any team is going to do it, it's going to be Fabi. I seriously believe that they've got the potential to do it because they are four very, very good players. If you sent all four of those to NA, they could get on top 6, probably top 6 NA teams immediately. I think they could do it.
Yeah, I think so too. Not sure about the Latin American team, but yeah, the European teams definitely have a good shot.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely.
All right. Well, we're going to circle back since we're done with the news a little bit and get to our little interview with Hidden Xperia. So all of our guests, we do a short little interview and get to learn a little bit more about them. So we'll go ahead and start off with the simple and easy question, Mr. Hidden Xperia. So how did you get involved with Halo originally? And how did you start getting involved with making YouTube videos?
Okay, so I started playing Halo when I was... I think I was 6, right? So Halo Combat Evolved had just launched in the UK, in the EU. It launched a few minutes later than in America. And I remember going to the Toys R Us, seeing all the signs for it, and saying, like, I need this game. And I got the game, I took it home, I played Halo till my eyes stung. and pretty much from the second I put the controller down for the first time, I knew for an absolute fact that this was going to be my game. And then time went by, I got even more addicted to it, even more obsessed. And then I started reading the books, and then I found out about the competitive side of it, and I just, anything Halo, I just eat it up. Competitive, lore, regular, anything. And then, I think 2010, I was massively involved, back when Halo 3 was still pulling like 1-2 million players a day. I was massively involved in the HLG side of it. I'm not sure if you guys have heard of HLG before.
Yep.
Yeah, well, I used to be like super into that. And everyone was making these like really dope hiding videos in Halo 3. Like with really cool music in the background, really well edited. And I was like, you know what? I want to make that. So I started a YouTube channel, which is where Hidden in my name comes from. The Xperia was just a word picked out of thin air. I don't know why I chose that. that's where the Hidden comes from. So I made the account, I ordered a capture card, and I started making hiding videos. And that's pretty much how I got into YouTube. Stemmed from my love of Halo, my love of HLG specifically, and then for most of the time on YouTube, to be honest with you, I've kind of just posted anything that I wanted to, but I took a break from YouTube a few years ago, and when I came back in 2015, I thought, right, I'm going to make sure my content is focused on Halo, and specifically on Halo lore, and just discussing Halo in general, and then here we are today.
Nice. What is it about the Halo lore that really gets, I guess, kind of gets your blood pumping, or makes you really inspired to do the kind of content that you put out? Because you put out a good variety of lore videos, not just necessarily what's the latest and greatest in lore stuff, kind of like how Tofrik does, but you're kind of a little all over the place with your videos.
Yeah, well, I think the thing that I love so much about the lore and the expanded universe in general is the fact that in regards to the expanded universe, it gets to tell stories that games can't. It's just more Halo. Like I said, I eat anything Halo up, and the expanded universe is literally just more Halo. So I eat that up at the drop of a hat. But also the fact that it can expand on characters that at first seem really two-dimensional in the games. Like, for example, let's just say Sergeant Johnson. You read Contact Harvest, and Sergeant Johnson becomes such a... I mean, he was already an awesome character, let's be honest. But he becomes such a better character when you read Contact Harvest. And it's just little things like that that enhance the games and just give me more information about Halo. That's why I love the lore so much. That's probably the best way I can explain it.
I think that's a pretty good way. I mean, it's always interesting, especially for people that are interested in lore, to see what is the one thing that really gets them interested, because there are just so many different aspects to the Halo lore that's out there within the franchise. So it's always interesting to see, like, what was that one thing that really got people involved whenever we have guests on into doing something that's lore specific?
For me, I would say, right, this is an unpopular opinion, one of my favorite Halo books, if not possibly my favorite, is The Flood. And when I first started reading The Flood, I think I was probably 9 years old, if not younger than that. And
oh,
I always thought the Flood were just, yeah, the Jenkins scene legit freaked me out. That freaked me out when I was that old. But I played the games and I really liked The Flood, but I always thought they were sort of this, I didn't know much about them, I always thought they were sort of this just, not generic, but this just regular zombie type enemy. And then I read The Flood and I was like, hang on, this stuff is actually pretty deep. Like, this is actually pretty terrifying.
Especially for a 9 year old.
It freaked me out, but I loved it. It was Halo. I was prepared to carry on.
Fair enough.
That Jenkins scene in particular is like, that was like, oh, dude, this is actually really, really terrifying. Like, the Flood are more than just these pieces of flesh that run at you and fall apart really easy. These guys are like genuinely terrifying. They play mind games with you.
Oh, yes.
That's probably the defining moment.
That's cool.
I was in my mid-20s and they scared the jeebus out of me.
I don't blame you, dude. I don't blame you.
Good stuff. So how long did you say you had been doing YouTube videos?
I started my channel in 2010.
Okay.
And I was making videos about like HLG. I also made other things like Call of Duty Zombies. I even, God forbid, dipped in Minecraft at one point. They were bad videos. I started in 2010, and then around 2013, I stopped, took about a year and a half break, and then came back in 2015, started doing just Halo content, because it's the thing that I wanted to focus on most, it's the thing that I love most more than anything, and here we are.
What's been your favorite thing to cover in your videos so far?
Ooh, I have two things. One is The Flood, because like I said, I'm a massive fan of The Flood, and their whole backstory. Super cryptic when you actually look into it. It's really cryptic. It's like, it's scary. It's everything that I love about sci-fi, basically. Or the art style. I have pretty strong views about Halo's art style, and I'd love talking about that in videos. I love critiquing it, talking about the old art style, and just providing my opinions, really. Some people like them, some people don't, but I don't know. I just like providing my opinions and making very long videos that are very overly edited about those opinions.
Hey, you got a passion for it, might as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's the way I see it.
Yeah, of course. I would assume with your interest being in The Flood, your favorite character would probably be the Gravemind.
My favorite character is actually torn between Chief or Arbiter, but my second or third favorite character, I guess you could say, is the Gravemind, followed by the Primordial.
Oh, they kind of come hand in hand. Yeah, that's a good one.
Honestly, the Primordial is the thing that made me love the Flood's backstory the most. Because the fact that I already love the idea of the Flood, but the fact that they are technically the corrupted version of the creators of everything that we know. That concept just, it adds like a whole new layer of just depth and everything to the Flood that just puts them like 19 levels above every single other game's version of zombies. The addition of the Primordial and the Precursors was such a good idea.
That was one of the things that really made me appreciate just kind of the depth of the Halo universe. And it kind of sucks that we really haven't had anything deeper since the Greg Bear novels.
Yeah, they were probably I'd say they were the three best, or Cryptum and Silentium were the two best Halo books so far. My favorite is still The Flood, but Cryptum and Silentium come second and third. Primordium was, it was really slow. I found that really tough to read, I'll be honest. I think it picked up at the end, but the first like three quarters is literally just walking through a jungle. That's like all it is. It picks up at the end.
That's where audiobooks come in handy.
I've been told that, and recently I re-listened to when I originally read the Forerunner trilogy, I read the books, but recently I re-listened to the audiobooks, and I had to stop so many times with Primordium. I just got so bored. I don't know what it was. It's just the first like 75% of it in the walking through the jungle. It was I couldn't hack it.
Yeah, I agree with you. That book was a really slow paced book until you get almost to the end of the book.
Yeah, and then it starts feeding into Silentium, which is a hell of a ride. That book is a hell of a ride.
Oh yeah,
awesome book. But yeah, Primordial and the Gravemind. I guess they sort of tie one in one. They are definitely some of my favorite Halo characters. Definitely.
Everything else since reading about the Primordial just seems so microscopic within the franchise. And I know like they tried to expand it a little bit with Halo 5 and like reopening the domain and Cortana's back in there and trying to make it a little more galactic scale, but it still feels just, it's this one little segment of the Halo franchise, which I know you really can't do much with a video game, but there's so much potential for branches within the Halo universe and what's been developed already for the franchise. And it's just like, they're just toying around with progressing in little areas where there's this big other narrative in the Halo universe that we haven't been treated to in such a long time.
Okay. I can probably help you with that. So, you know how there's the whole thing about the Precursor's final test that they give to species when they think they might be ready for the mantle, right? Treat every single thing that happens in the games, whether it's massive or small, as building humanity up to receive that test. Because that's what I think it is. That's why I think Halo 5 was, Halo 4, all this stuff, it was humanity building themselves up to the point where they're finally going to be given this test and they're going to have to fight the Flood or, hell, maybe even some of the remaining Precursors that left the galaxy. The very few of them that may have done. Think of it as all building up to this final test, because then that sort of makes it feel like all the small details and the small plots are feeding into this massive, massive plot that is going to change everything. And I don't mean like Halo 5 change everything where, oh, there's a guardian above your planet now. I mean like legit change everything. I mean like either wipe out humanity or make them the new rulers of the galaxy. I think if you do it like that, if you think of it like that, it adds like a scope to every single plot that they tell, whether it's tiny or massive. If it's all building up to the same thing, then it makes everything kind of significant, at least in my opinion.
Okay.
That's a good way to look at it.
It makes sense.
I like that.
It makes sense, I think. I think as well, like, if you look at it like that as well, it makes all the small stories that seem really, not pointless, not in a bad way, but you know how you have some stories, like, I'm trying to think of one. I had a really good example of this the other day. Some stories that are so minuscule and so just don't, technically don't matter. When you think of it that way, and the fact that it is all feeding into this ultimatum, it adds like a level of interest to everything to me. Even adds like a small level of interest to Halo 5 story, which is difficult, but I'll tell you what I can get.
I've never really thought of it that way.
That actually kind of plays into some of the stuff that they've been putting in the books. Like in Last Light, the captured Forerunner AI?
Oh, yeah. It's been a while since I've read Last Light.
Yeah, they captured this AI, but you know Oni. They can't just leave it alone.
Nope. Oni are the meddlers.
This AI could have been unleashed.
Yeah, definitely.
And I mean, could have guided Cortana to the Warden.
The way I see it is that even without, like, even within Oni, the stuff that we don't know about, like, they'll have smart AIs, like, running logistics, running diagnostics and stuff. All those AIs within, like, weapons facilities and stuff, they could have, like, legit joined the Creators. Like, I'm not a fan of the Creators story arc at all. I think it's a really generic sci-fi trope. But at the same time, that does add, like, a little level of interest, because the fact that there could be rogue AIs within Oni at, like, nuclear testing facilities, like maybe havoc testing facilities and stuff like that. There could be AIs that have gone rogue in there, which kind of spells doom for humanity.
There's enough information in the Halo universe. You could look at it and see a thousand possibilities.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Especially as of late, because they've left so many plot holes open.
Yeah. You can say that again.
You know, they've got plenty of directions to take the story.
Yeah, definitely.
I don't mind if they fill in some of these plot holes. Just don't do it like they did with Julum Dama.
Oh. Let's not have another repeat.
Yeah, I said that last week, so I won't harp on it too much. But it's like, well, the AI from Last Light. Okay, we haven't heard anything yet, and I'm not saying we're not going to. There could be a continuation in another book. You know, we don't know exactly what's planned for future.
It was Troy Denning, wasn't it, that wrote Last Light? I'm pretty sure it was.
I believe so.
Yeah, I think so.
Troy Denning has a book coming out. I think it's next year, January next year. Halo Envoy.
Yeah, that was recently announced.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've already got it on my wish list to pre-order.
Nice.
Nice. Oh no, Envoy's, no, my bad. No, Envoy is by Tobias Buckle, who wrote, you're right, oh my god, I've got a really bad memory. Oh yeah, he wrote Cold Protocol.
Oh yeah.
So that should be interesting.
Oh, that's right. I remember people talking about that.
Yeah. And there's another Troy Denning is writing another Halo book, and it's coming out next January, if I remember correctly. So that could follow on from Last Light or expand on some details. Could do. Time will tell.
Yeah.
Jeez, I need to clean out my wish list.
Lots of stuff in there?
Oh, yeah.
Standard procedure.
Yeah. Retribution.
That's it. That's the one, Halo Retribution.
And they're calling, well, Amazon says August of 2017, but, you know, there's no telling when that's going to be.
Oh, yeah, same here. Yeah. I'm sure there was one releasing next January. I remember one of the dates, it got pushed back recently. Oh, well.
There's another one that is yet to be titled.
Yeah, I'm seeing that as well. Untitled GH.
That, you know, they don't have an author on or anything, so who knows when that's going to be. But, yeah, I'm really looking forward to the Halo Envoy.
Yeah.
Because Cold Protocol is a really good book. I enjoy it a lot.
Yeah, no, for sure. I did as well when I last read it, which was 7 years ago. I can't remember. I had to read some.
Yeah, I listened to it 2 weeks ago.
Oh, see, that's the thing. I need to start buying more audiobooks and just listen to them, because it's so much easier than reading. And like, I have a weird problem with reading where, like, I'm a really slow reader. So I think audiobooks is definitely the way to go for me from now on.
Well, I mean, the whole reason I carry a smartphone is because I wanted to have an MP3 player, but I didn't want to have to carry an MP3 player.
Yeah.
So I just,
yeah,
I loaded up with audiobooks.
Yeah.
I've got, well, currently I think I pretty much have all of the actual books on my phone.
Oh, damn. That's a lot.
So, you know, I just rotate through them, and, you know, I've got a 30-minute drive to work, so, you know, I do an hour a day on books.
That's decent.
And I can't even count how many times I've listened to each individual book, including Primordium. I listen to it as often as I do the other books. But
for good reason.
Every time, it's still an adventure. You know, I do pick up new things still, and every time I listen to them, it's like something new comes to mind.
Yeah, I had that effect with Krypton when I, because I read the Forerunner trilogy not as soon as they came out, but it wasn't long after. Like, I read each book not long after it came out, and it had been a while since I'd last read them. When I re-listened to Krypton, there were so many more details. Like, the fact that when... spoilers here, if you haven't read Krypton, warning. But when Bornswiller goes back home, I think it's like halfway through the book, his father calls him Bastion, which is pretty damn significant, the whole Bastion thing in Halo 5. Like, I'm not saying that it links to it at all, but it's pretty coincidental. Just so many little details like that I missed out first time, or that now might have a meaning. So that's why I love Halo so much, because like old details like that that then meant nothing could possibly mean something huge now. And I love it when little details from past like stories get brought back into the limelight. Things that you missed originally get brought back into the limelight. I love that about stories. That's why I'm such a big fan of the Call of Duty zombie storyline. It's exactly the same. And that's why I'm such a big fan of Halo's storyline, because little things get picked out and expanded on, and it's, I love it.
I do enjoy the way they intermix the stories.
Yeah, same.
You know, for, you know, lore nuts and the extended universe, it's great how they intermix the different stories and how, you know, to get the complete, well, I wouldn't say complete picture, but a grasp on the picture, you really do need to be involved in the entire extended fiction.
Oh, yeah, for sure. You need to know your stuff. You need to know how things link together. You need to know dates. You need to know how storylines intertwine from different books. It's tough keeping track, but it's definitely worth it.
Oh, yeah. There's been many times that I'll be listening to a book and I'll hear something and I'm like, that doesn't sound right. And I'll immediately go to Halopedia.
Yeah, same. Halopedia is my absolute go-to for videos, for just general fact-checking. It's my go-to.
You guys are making me want to read more. I need to catch up a
definitely
lot.
Worth it. Yeah, there's a lot to catch up on.
Let's see. There's four books you haven't read?
I think there's four or five.
Oh my.
I haven't read Hunters in the Dark. I still haven't finished New Blood. This will be my fourth time trying to restart it. Haven't read Fractures, haven't read Tales from Slipspace. And I think there's another one I hadn't read yet. Oh, I haven't read Mortal Dictata yet either.
Oh jeez.
Oh, not wanna leave that one for last. I restarted Hunters in the Dark three times. There's a tough one to get through. I restarted Hunters in the Dark three times, and I don't know why, because that book, I really, 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 really enjoyed that book. I really enjoyed it.
It is a very good book.
Yeah.
It brought back memories of the older Halo novels.
It kind of did for me as well, because there was this feeling of, like, this feeling of exploration. Because they were going back to the Ark, but it was completely different, and the feeling of exploration felt so nice. And of course, let's not forget flesh-eating trees.
Yes, flesh-eating trees.
Being the biggest takeaway from that book.
Because, you know, everybody needs flesh-eating trees.
Yeah, any universe is objectively enhanced by the presence of flesh-eating trees. Oh, definitely, 100%.
Okay. Not sure what I'm missing there. Flesh-eating trees. I'll look forward to that when I read it on my Kindle. I do have all the Halo books since I think Krypton On purchased for Kindle. So anything before that I haven't gone back and purchased yet, but anything after that I think I have downloaded on my Kindle.
Well, you better get reading.
Well, I've got was it 5.5 hour? It's like a 5 or 5.5 hour flight out to LA on Friday.
There you go, then. Perfect timing.
Well, you should be able to get through one of them.
Yeah. I'll probably be editing this podcast, though, on the flight, so maybe not.
The grind never stops.
Nope, it does not. So, I know you have a video out on your take on the story for Halo Wars 2 and the ending a little bit. But I want to do a quick synopsis for the folks here on the podcast who may not have watched that video, because you brought up some interesting points that I hadn't really considered, and I guess I really didn't know about with how certain timelines matched up with each other. But why don't you give us a quick synopsis of that, and then I think that'd be an interesting discussion point to kind of close out the show.
Okay. Yeah, sure. So basically, wait, you want me to summarize my review?
Yeah.
Okay, so basically, I enjoyed the overarching story. I enjoy what it sets up. I feel like the ending, or lack thereof, was a big no-no. Having an ending like that after Halo 5's cliffhanger was a bad idea. But I love some of the action sequences. Watching Jerome board the Enduring Conviction with Isabel was fantastic. I loved watching that. That cutscene felt like classic Halo. Like, if I had to sum up classic Halo in one cutscene, it would genuinely be that. Just watching one Spartan take down like half a ship's entire crew, while there's this badass AI behind him hacking into the ship and hacking into the glassing beam. It's just, that entire scene was perfect. So yeah, overall, I enjoyed the story. I enjoyed what it set it up. I just really, really hated the ending, or again, lack thereof. And also the fact that there are quite a few details that the characters who, bear in mind, had been in cryosleep for 29 years, 28 years, one of the two, they shouldn't know these facts, because it's about things like Halo rings that were discovered while they were in cryo. They just suddenly know them, like it's just common knowledge. Like, obviously, Isabel did inform them about it, but there was no mention of that at all. They just suddenly knew. But yeah, other than that, I enjoyed it. I did enjoy it.
That's good.
Well, they had that same problem in Halo 4 too.
Yeah, it was to a degree. My major issue with Halo 4 was the Deus Ex Machina in the form of the librarian scene, where it's like, okay, 6 minutes, tell them the entire history of humanity, the Forerunners, the Flood, the ancient humanity, Geishas, everything. It's like, that was the biggest information dump, and I understand why casual fans were put off by that story purely because of that scene. I do get that.
It seemed just too condensed in Halo 4, especially with having to rely on some of the books to really understand a lot of the other stuff that was going on in that campaign.
Yeah, I mean, I loved it, but again, there was, without reading the books and knowing obviously why the Didact hates humanity and the whole thing with the Reclaimers, the Didact just seemed like a simple alien, I hate humanity for reasons that are unknown type of villain. Whereas obviously if you read the books, you knew why, it was a deep character and everything, but to fully flesh out the Didact and to fully like understand his motive, you had to read the books, you had to read the Forerunner trilogy.
Yeah, that's one of the big problems that I had with the Halo 4 campaign is, yeah, if you didn't read the external fiction, you were kind of lost. With Halo 2 story, yeah, ending the game on a cliffhanger, probably not the best idea. I do have to admit, I like what they did in the ending, especially knowing there's extended campaign coming. So yeah, it kind of all depends on what they do with that extended campaign.
In Halo Wars 2, yeah, it does. I think we're going to get a Banished campaign at some point. I think one thing that could actually be kind of cool would be if we got a Banished campaign, but it carried on straight after the Halo Wars 2 ending. So you played as them while they were suffering like setback after setback after setback. It'd be kind of cool. I don't know how they'd balance it in a gameplay sense, because obviously if you're losing in the gameplay, you can't progress through the campaign for obvious reasons. But
to do the Banished side, you have to give the player a way to win.
Yeah.
Because if they're constantly just losing, they're not going to want to play.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
It's, that's simple psychology. So I don't really know how they're going to work a Banished campaign.
Yeah, I think it was found in the game file somewhere. But I don't know how they're going to do it either. Unless, obviously, it could be the case that once the game ends, the Banished start actually fighting back and winning, and you play as the Banished when they win. Maybe that happens. I don't know. I guess time will tell. Time will tell how they'll do that. I hope that they don't bring the creators into it, because I'd like to have another story that's sort of just like free of the created before Halo 6. Just give us something that's like contained. So, I don't know, because if Cortana shows up with the Guardian and she's like, oh, you're under my control now. I'll be sort of like, can we not? Can we just leave this alone for a little bit and just like have a nice contained story about the arc and the importance of it?
I don't think they're going to be that direct with the shooter storyline. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm sure they'll hint at it, which, well, they've already hinted at it with the ending. You know, I'm sure there will be references made to it, but at least so far, I don't think they're going to be in a way that's going to be distracting from the story they're telling.
Yeah.
It's like for anybody that has not played any of the other Halo games, the ending for Halo Wars, okay, they see a big machine.
Yeah. When you put it like that, that's quite interesting.
They see the Guardian, but they don't understand why it's significant. You know, they just think it's okay. Well, it's there to or attack the Halo or something like that. It's, you know, the way they laid that out, that is okay. You know, for the lore nuts, they feed us. They give us that, okay, what are they going to do now? So as long as they keep that stuff, you know, keep things like that in there to where, you know, it's not consequential to the person that doesn't know the entire story, but the lore nuts are going to go crazy over it, that's fine.
When you put it like that, I get that, but at the same time, it's like, so the person that hasn't played Halo 5 is like, okay, what's this big robot? Why is there a big robot here? And the person that has played Halo 5 is going to be like, oh, not this shit again. Can we just leave this? And if it was like, I get what you're saying, and the person's going to be like, okay, this is different. There's a big robot trying to control us. But at the same time, they're going to be like, okay, so why is there a big robot here?
It can go many ways.
Yeah, sure.
It could inspire them to maybe do a little digging. What is this thing?
Yeah, I mean,
and why is it here?
We still know next to nothing about the Guardians. Like, I do find that kind of funny how we still know like very, 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 very little about them. We know that they were used by the Foreigners to keep troubled worlds in line. We know that they've got an EMP pulse and that they can go dormant under planets for God knows how long. I'm pretty sure that's all we know. And to say that they're like the main, that they are literally the name of Halo 5, quite literally the name of Halo 5, and also the main premise for the next story going forward, we know worryingly little about them.
Yeah, as far as facts about them, we don't know much. Of course, up until Halo 5, all we knew is you were killed by the Guardians.
I wonder if they're going to try and canonize that.
I think they already did.
Oh, did they? Oh, damn.
I thought they did. Or maybe I might be imagining it.
I mean, I'm not going to complain. That's quite cool.
Well, it does fit. Sort of. Of course, we didn't know about these Guardians in Halo 3.
Well.
But it's a nice homage to the earlier games. Especially when you get the, you know, the random you were killed by the Guardians.
Well, fun fact in regards to Halo 3, you might know this, you might not do. We were supposed to fight a Guardian in Halo 3. They were cut from Halo 3.
I did not know they were cut from Halo 3. No.
Oh, we obviously the multiplayer map Guardian. That was actually originally a campaign mission that was cut, and we were supposed to fight a Guardian. I'm pretty sure on Epitaph there's a hologram of a Guardian. That was the original design for them. I think this is correct. That was the original design for them. But yeah, we were supposed to fight one. And supposedly we were meant to rip out its eye, according to Halo canon.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's pretty crazy how that was. Or that was Halo 3 content, and we got it in Halo 5.
Interesting.
Yeah, kind of cool.
It's all recyclable.
Yeah, totally.
Except we didn't rip out any Guardian's eye.
Yeah. Well, when you look at it like that, actually.
Maybe that's Halo 6.
Yeah, that's Halo 6. We're going to rip off its tail. Yeah, no, when you look at it like that, though, you've got Halo 3, where the inspiration from the Guardian was taken from. And then you've got Combat Evolved, where I think it was in 2000, there were a bunch of emails sent around Bungie, where somebody was pretending to be Cortana or something, and she went rampant. And there was also, obviously, that...
The Cortana letters?
Yeah, that's it, the Cortana letters. And then there's obviously that, that ironically laughed-about story arc from Combat Evolved, where Cortana went power-hungry when she tapped into 04. So, yeah.
Yeah, I said last week, you know, there's stuff in this game that we won't put together until it stares us in the face.
Yeah, exactly. Which, that's one of the things that I really like. Like, the fact that there is stuff like that. Like, Bastion kind of seems like that. That seems like something that right now is really clouded in mystery. We know next to nothing about it. But I could see that having a pretty significant impact in the future.
You guys are in over my head. I need to read more. There's so much stuff out there that apparently I am not in the know about.
Yeah, there is a lot of stuff. Like, there's very finite details. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't even know, like, half of it. Like, there's some stuff that's, like, from, like, early Halo 2 marketing and stuff that I just don't know. Like, people like, comment on it, and I'm like, wait, what? Did I miss something?
It's a lot to keep track of in this universe.
Yeah.
I know quite a bit of stuff about Halo, at least the story, but I still consider myself a novice when it comes to this, to being, you know, knowledgeable about Halo. There are so many little things that I don't know. Like, well, the Guardian thing. I probably ran across it at some time, but I honestly don't remember it. I knew that the map Guardian had something to do with the Guardians. Same with Epitaph. But, you know, I didn't know that it was actually a cut level.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, it was cut. I'm not sure where from. Well, like, what stage in the campaign it was cut from. But, yeah, 99.9% sure that was a cut level. I remember reading that somewhere. It would have been very interesting to fight a Guardian, but I don't think it was the same type of Guardian. As in, I don't think they were functionally similar. I think it was a different type of Guardian. But
yeah, well, Eric Kabu in the chat is saying it was more like a Guardian Sentinel.
Oh, so like a different type of Sentinel. Like a
different variant. Okay. Like a bigger, badder Sentinel.
That makes sense. Because whenever Bungie expanded on the Forerunners, unless they were talking about living Forerunners, which they did very little, they sort of just expanded on the Sentinels. So, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, this brings back nightmares of those Reaver Sentinels.
Oh, yeah.
I remember the first time I played Halo 3 and one of those picked up my tank and went with it.
I mean, Halo 2.
Like, I just got that!
Yeah, sorry. No, I got, like, when you see an Elite drive underneath it, and he's like, no, 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 and he just starts getting pulled up. It's like, dude, come on. Come on. You should have learned from last time.
Yeah, those... Oh, jeez. And then you get to fight one with no vehicle.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Fighting an Enforcer with a plasma rifle. That was that was balanced.
Sentinel beams, plasma nades, carbine.
Yeah, on Legendary, that section is not fun at all. Because you've got the Flood jumping on you while also trying to fight an Enforcer. That is just...
Yeah, I figured out real quick, you don't have to hang around.
Oh, no, you can just kill the Flood and then jump through the door.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I did that on Legendary, I think. You can kill some of the Flood, then wait for them to come through the door, and then just jump through it.
Yeah, wait for that next wave to spawn and just... Bye!
Yeah, later.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, it's... I think Halo 2 is probably the hardest Halo game still out of all the Halo games.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, easily.
Hands down. It's just like, everyone regarded Combat Evolved as being way too easy on Legendary. So with Halo 2, they were like, oh, okay, we need to make it harder. So they just went through the roof with it, and got to the point where it was kind of ridiculous, like, sometimes.
Wait, what? What would you do to my game?
Yeah. What did you do to the Jackals, Bungie? Why did you ruin the Jackals?
Well, the deal with Combat Evolved is there are just so many shortcuts in that game.
Yeah, shortcuts and skippable areas.
It does, you know, it does make Legendary easy on that game once you know the skips.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Like, I saw in the control room, just skipping out the entire inner section by jumping off the bridge. It's like, you skip the entire game out.
The, you know, in Halo 2, yes, there's still some pretty good skips, but they cranked the difficulty so much in Legendary.
And let's not forget the fact that in co-op, one person dies, we go back to the last checkpoint. That was a,
Oh, yeah, that was always
fun. Without skulls.
Yeah, let's say fun. I never even tried Lasso in Halo 2 because I'd rather not have to buy another controller. I'd rather keep this controller intact and not destroyed.
I think if I ever do that, I am going to use one of my currently retired controllers.
That's a very
that
smart
way
idea.
When I snap it in half, I won't be so upset.
Bring it out of retirement.
I would not use a new one. Don't use the Elite. Do not use the Elite.
The Elite will be put away.
Yeah, lock it in a safe.
Yikes. Oh, geez. Yeah, we kind of ran over our time, so I know there's some other stuff that we could definitely talk about, but I don't want to keep you too late since you're overseas, so we'll go ahead and wrap it up for tonight, and maybe we'll get you on in another episode in the not-too-distant future when we have more Lord stuff to talk about, but thanks for coming on the show.
Yeah, cheers, dude. I appreciate the offer. I really enjoyed it. This has been a fun discussion.
We always like to have it fun here. At least we try. So for everyone listening, where can they find you on the interwebs?
You can find me on this little site that you might have heard of. Possibly, I think, is it called YouTube? Yeah, YouTube. You can find me on YouTube. YouTube.com/HiddenXperia. Also, Twitter.com/HiddenXperia. Facebook.com/HiddenXperia. If you couldn't guess it, just HiddenXperia on all the social media sites. Hit me up. Talk to me. Do whatever.
Nice. And do you have like a regular video schedule, or do you just kind of post whenever?
I sort of post whenever, but at the moment I'm only posting on the weekends because videos they do a lot better on the weekends. It's just nicer uploading on the weekends because I can spend the entire week making the videos, making sure that I've got two good videos to upload, and then when the weekend hits, I just upload one on Saturday, upload one on Sunday, and then we're all good.
Awesome. So yeah, make sure you check him out. Make sure you head on over to YouTube, which is his main place that he posts and does his stuff. So thanks again for coming on. Remember, you can check
us. Thanks for the invite.
Yeah. Remember, you can check us out on our social media as well. If we have it, you can just go to podtacular.com/whatever it is, and you'll find us there. Twitter, Facebook, Twitch, Instagram, which we'll be using quite a bit this weekend from Los Angeles, so make sure you are following us on Instagram. We'll be posting some pics there of the venue. And we're also on Discord. You can do podtacular.com/Discord, and that will get you involved in our Discord chat, which is kind of the replacement for our forums. So hit us up over there. We also have our Spartan Company. We have our Xbox Club. So we're a little bit all over the place with all of our social media stuff. Also, check out the podcast network. We are part of no, we do not have MySpace, Yarky Boo. You can check us out along with other podcasts that we are affiliated with, like Critscast, Guardian Radio, Work in Progress, How to Murder Time, Podcast 76, and The Learning Cliff. You can check that out over at thepodcast.com and let them know that we sent you. We will be doing a few interviews over the weekend at the Halo World Championship, so we'll probably have another episode in between this one and the next one, but you'll be able to, or at least hopefully I will not be tired to the point where we won't be doing the podcast next week. But you can check us out on Tuesdays at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. That's when we normally do our podcast. We shifted it today just from a timing perspective. But you can check us out on Twitch at that time for our podcast, and then at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time on Friday for our game nights that we host, hosted by Mr. Godzilla T. With that said, I'm going to go ahead and wrap things up for tonight. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in again. This has been episode 574, and we will see you guys on the flip side. Keep on fragging cliffhanger endings.